Greetings. I'm James Gillen, your guest for As You Wish Talk Radio on the BBS Radio Network. I've got a very special guest tonight, and it's John Rappaport. And John has worked as a freelance investigative reporter for over 30 years. He's the author of three explosive collections, The Matrix Revealed, Exit from the Matrix, and Power Outside the Matrix. His website is nomorefakenews.com. After the last 30 years, John's independent research has encompassed such areas as deep politics, conspiracies, alternative health, the potential of the human imagination, mind control, the medical cartel, symbology, and solutions to the takeover of the planet by hidden entities. He's written articles on politics, health, media, culture, and art for the LA Weekly, Spin Magazine, Stern, Village Voice, Nexus, CBS Health Watch, and other newspapers and magazines in the U.S. and Europe. In 1982, the LA Weekly submitted his name for Pulitzer Prize for his interview with the president of El Salvador University, where the military had taken over the campus. In 1994, John ran for a seat in the U.S. Congress from the 29th District of Los Angeles, California, garnering a 20% of the vote, running against a 20-year incumbent. In 1996, he started the Great Boycott against eight corporate chemical giants, Monsanto, Dow, DuPont, Bayer, Foyst, Rhone, Polink, hope I'm saying that right, Empirical Chemical Industries, and Ciba Geigy. The boycott continues to operate today. Since 2000, he's operated largely away from the mainstream media because, as he puts it, my research was not friendly to the conventional media. He's lectured extensively all over the U.S. on the question, who runs the world and what can we do about it? And most recently, he's been instrumental in the voice of truth and reason behind what he calls the reality manufacturing machine and covert operations that's been called or labeled Ebola. We've got a lot to cover, and I want to jump right into it. So welcome to the program, John. Are you with us?
I'm here. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've been following your work for quite some time, and I must say I'm so grateful that there is a voice of reason out there that is bringing forward the truth and uncovering the nonsense going on, and it's getting to be like a very, very bad play, you know, that's unfolding, and you're one of the few people that's bringing some light into these situations that are pretty detrimental to the human race.
No question about it. Yeah, I've been covering these so-called epidemics ever since 1987. So I see the repeating patterns, the same tools of propaganda used over and over again, the same agendas behind the scenes. And you know, what I'm reminded of is the presidential election in America. I can go back to the 1970s when people would tell me every time an election would come up, this is the one. This is the big one. I mean, if you don't vote for the right guy now, then everybody's going to die. The world is going to collapse and so on and so forth. Every single time, it's the same hype and the same propaganda, as if somehow voting, you know, for one idiot or another is really going to make a difference. And it's the same with these so-called epidemics. Each time one comes up, West Nile, bird flu, SARS, swine flu, Ebola, you know, I hear the same thing and I read the same thing from people. You know, this one is going to destroy the world unless we do something about it right now, and there has to be a massive effort immediately, and we have to restrict everybody's freedom, and we have to do this, that, and the other thing. And each time when I dive into the research, I see hoax perpetrated with the agenda of ultimately population management, control, loss of freedom, more restrictions on people, and especially in the medical arena, forcing people to be compliant to whatever the medical authorities say they must do or doctors tell them what to do. Like, for example, you've got to take this vaccine or this drug or whatever. And these are all progressive conditioning processes to bring the population under control, and in the medical arena to make them into cradle-to-grave patients of the toxic medical cartel.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to argue with. I mean, I've watched this system actually take out my own father. I put him in touch with a friend of mine, a German scientist, and they had him on a regimen of this giant box of pills to take, and he was a zombie, totally incoherent, didn't know who anybody was, couldn't even get out of his chair. It was amazing, and we got him off the pills and got him on some crystallized oxygen water and some other formulas, and just 3 or 4 days later, he got out of the chair and he walked 2 miles over to my house, and he was totally coherent, you know. And then, unfortunately,
what happened to me, right? Where was I?
Yeah. And everybody freaked out about it. And the next thing you know, they got him back on the pills again. He's back a zombie again. And the doctors flipped out. And, you know, unfortunately, the doctors will get very upset. Rather than wanting their patient to be healed, they would say, "How dare you trespass on my drug pushing situation here, you know, cut into my income or whatever, you know," and they get all upset, you know. That's what blows me away. It's like, you just saw somebody totally heal. Why would you not implement this in your own practice? And because, you know, as you're saying, it's a business. They're not in the business of healing people. They're in the business of making money and pushing as many drugs as possible.
Yeah, toxifying people. I've heard the story in different forms that you just told. Too many times.
Mm-hmm.
Too many times.
Yeah.
Patient is toxified, poisoned by pharmaceuticals, gets off the drugs, does something natural, recovers, and then, you know, family and friends or doctors close in and they say, effectively, you only think you're better. You're not really better. I mean, okay, so you walk 3 miles, you're out fishing. You're playing tennis, but that's all a delusion, you see. You just dream.
Yeah, you're good.
Because this is going to come back and destroy you, and the only way that you can save yourself is to take the drugs, and then they go back on the drugs and they die.
Mm-hmm. I know this latest epidemic, I'd love to get your take on that, because I am just getting inundated with emails about it. They're saying, "Why aren't you covering this?" And I said, "Well, we have in the newsletter, but we haven't covered it on the radio show." And I said, it looks to me like just a major false flag event. Again, you know, just to get everybody to give up their power, give up their freedom, and get everybody inoculated again with probably the very thing that they say they're fighting against.
Yeah. Well, let me run it down as succinctly as I can. Where I start every time is with the following. They say, the medical authorities, there's a sudden outbreak in so-and-so area. It could be Mexico, could be China, could be Africa, could be wherever. Never the United States, by the way. Never starts in the U.S. No, there's no such thing as a Brooklyn virus. It's always, you know, way far away. And then it comes here. Right? And so the first thing I do is I look to see, is there really accelerated death and dying in that area where they're talking about? And quite often I find no evidence for that. Secondly, they always come up immediately with a virus and they say it's being caused by the coronavirus, the H1N1 virus, in this case the Ebola virus, et cetera, et cetera. And everybody buys that. I never buy that. I ask, how do they know? How do they know that anybody, A, has this Ebola virus, and B, that if he does, it's causing any harm? How would you know that? And because I've been involved in this for 30-some-odd years, I know where to go, and that is the diagnostic tests that are run on people. Because that is, and I hope the listeners have their brains screwed in tight on this one, that's the only way that you would be able to say so-and-so has Ebola. You ran a diagnostic test, and it came up positive for Ebola. Otherwise, you're just, you know, whistling in the dark and talking about symptoms that could be from anything. So I look at these tests, and I've analyzed them many times before. In the case of Ebola, there are two major tests, diagnostic tests, types of tests that are done. One is called an antibody test, and the other is called a PCR test, very sophisticated. The antibody test has many opportunities for fraud and false positives. That's a story we could talk about for 3 hours in itself. In other words, the test says positive, but it's really reacting to other things that have nothing to do with the virus in question. But assuming that doesn't happen in this particular case, all the test can say, if it's positive, is that the person at some point in time contacted the virus in question. Doesn't say he was sick, he is sick, he will get sick, or any of that. In fact, prior to 1985, when the so-called science was turned upside down, a positive antibody test was interpreted as a sign that the patient's immune system was in great shape. He had contacted the virus and thrown it off. So great, good for you, you're fine. Now, all of a sudden, it's given a reverse spin, and now this is said to be, oh, you're in deep trouble, you're probably going to die if we don't find a treatment for you. It's not science at all. It's a complete hoax utilized to inflate case numbers of any disease in which it's the test. The PCR test, which was invented by a biochemist named Carrie Mullis, who won a Nobel Prize for it, is a process by which you take a very tiny, tiny, tiny fleck of supposedly genetic material from a patient, and you assume that that material is part of a virus, and you blow it up, amplify it millions of times so that you can observe it. Again, many, many things can go wrong with that test. But assuming that it's done correctly, all it tells you is that, again, the patient has contacted the virus in question and has some undisclosed amount of it in his body. But it doesn't say whether it's enough to cause disease, because you need millions and millions and millions of active viruses, say Ebola, to even begin to say that it's going to cause disease in somebody. And why did they have to do the PCR test in the first place? Because they couldn't find any by conventional means. They couldn't isolate virus, they couldn't purify it, they couldn't look at it, they couldn't blow it up by very direct means. So they have to use this incredible amplification, which means, basically, there's not enough there to even think about saying it's going to cause disease. So these are the tests. They say nothing. They give you no information. They're utterly unreliable and useless. So, as brain-shattering as this is for many people, when the medical authorities say, so-and-so has Ebola, Dr. Keith Brantley has Ebola, or Duncan, the guy in Dallas who died, had Ebola, or thousands of people in West Africa have Ebola, they have no knowledge of this whatsoever. Their tests are completely useless. What they're really doing is just writing script and going by vague, basic, general symptoms. So right from the beginning, the whole thing is a scientific fraud. Everything about it. And of course, I well understand that in the midst of hysteria, most people would refuse to believe this, and they would just go with the, you know, CDC, the World Health Organization, and they would go with the imagery of fear and the propaganda. But what I'm telling you is what you're not going to hear from anybody else.
Now, the motive, you know, we always say, what is the motive behind this? And almost every time, follow the money and you'll find out what the motive is, or you know, sometimes it's not even about the money. It's just about, you know, some other agenda like population control or something of that nature. I'm curious, have you done some research in that area to find out, you know, who is going to be capitalizing on these programs?
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, you have to realize that West Africa, which is, I mean, people are sick and dying all the time in these three countries, Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. I mean, the living conditions are horrendous. Decades of war, poverty, malnutrition, starvation, toxic pollution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But these countries are extremely mineral rich. You've got diamonds lying on the beach in Sierra Leone, okay? And you've got other mineral reserves. And so locking down these countries is yet another phase in the operation to control these resources. And who would be doing that? Well, of course, the heads of government in those countries. But really, who they're in collaboration with are giant multinational corporations. Mining corporations that want to come in and steal huge amounts of arable farmland and set up corporate, agriculture farms, mm-hmm. investors, financiers who want to come in. And so this is the play. This is another move. We scream Ebola, we say quarantine, we isolate everybody, we seal off the borders. And, of course, you've got American troops in there now that are aiding in this corporate agenda. I would refer readers to a book by the highest-ranking Marine in the United States, Smedley Butler, in 1934, called War as a Racket, about 50 or 60 pages that'll just put a dagger in your heart when he confesses that he came to realize that all of his fighting in wars on behalf of his country were really to benefit corporations and banks. So this is happening as one of the main agendas behind this whole thing. Then, of course, you've got the vaccine manufacturers and the people who are making huge amounts of money on the diagnostic tests and so forth. They stand to make huge amounts of money here. And the drug manufacturers, you know, if a drug is released to treat Ebola, that will make huge amounts of money. So they're all in to promote this hype and this agenda. And then, as I started off by saying, who are the biggest globalist players on the planet? In other words, who wants to make the planet into a single entity managed and controlled across all borders by an elite cadre of power players? Well, one of the major, if not the major players in this whole globalist scheme is the Rockefeller dynasty, the Rockefeller Empire, as personified these days by David Rockefeller. And Rockefeller interests have been, I would say, first in line on the planet in bringing the kind of medicine that we now have in this world to fruition, pharmaceutical-based medicine, heavy uses of drugs, vaccines, and so forth and so on. Most of these drugs and vaccines are extremely toxic. So what is the agenda there? Well, the agenda is to toxify populations. In other words, Ebola is another propaganda hype used to condition people to fall in line and do what the authorities say. Take your drugs, take your vaccines, do what the doctor says. From cradle to grave, you're a patient. You're under our control. And in the long run, there is no greater means of population control on the planet than medical. So the real medical agenda here and globalist agenda, The long-term agenda is to continue to condition populations to say, we give up, this is too horrible, this is too frightening. You know, first we had this, and then we had swine flu, and now we have Ebola. And so whatever the doctors say, whatever the CDC says, I'll believe it, I'll take the vaccine, I'll take the drug, let me get in line. I'll live my whole life doing whatever my doctor tells me to do. Because that's a fantastic means of population control. Not only does it wipe out a lot of people, but more importantly, it weakens people. It makes them unable to think, unable to act. It drains away their energy, their independence. They can't rebel. They can't fight. They can't stand up for themselves. They can't be independent. You've now got a world full of zombies, essentially, who just do what they're told. And that is a major piece of this Ebola agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've watched that over and over again with people. With once they get on all the meds and they get their box of meds, they just start deteriorating really fast, and their minds start deteriorating. Everything they become totally zombified, you might say, and over and over. And then I've watched the opposite effect happen when people, you know, go through alternative means. They end up getting healed. They end up getting clearer, and their health comes back. And like you're saying, you know, they're out playing tennis or golf or anything else. And, you know, I was reading the statistics with the AMA, and they said that you have over a 400% better chance of surviving cancer by not doing, you know, radiation and chemotherapy. So why on earth hasn't any of these so-called organizations that are there to protect us, you know, come down on these people, and especially with the CDC lately releasing their information about how they knew that the inoculations were going to cause autism, but they went ahead with it anyway, turning all these children into basically, you know, with autism and all the other debilitating effects. Yeah, and then I read another article about the over there, I'm not sure if it was in Africa or India, but the Gates Foundation inoculated all these people for polio, and they had maybe 12 cases, and by the time they're done, they had over 40,000 people with polio. And so you look at this whole program, and I know you've been looking at this for a long time from top to bottom. It's pure insanity. They're all doing exactly opposite of what they say they're doing, and to the point of genocide.
You bet. And let me just enter one other factor here, and that is our educational system. Because most people are completely incapable of thinking through the kinds of things that we're talking about right now, right here. They just can't do it. So if you begin to talk to them about any of this, not only because they want to conform and they're afraid of anything new getting into their mind, you know, do they run away from you? But even if they didn't run away from you, they just are incapable of thinking through any of this. They just don't have the means, because in their education, they haven't been taught how to do this. And they've been instead subjected to a kind of behavioral control in schools that really prepares them to do nothing more than fit in, live it out, die, that's it. And that's one reason why, as part of my collection, The Matrix Revealed, and also another one, Power Outside the Matrix, I've included training in logic and critical analysis, because it's absolutely essential. If you've got millions of dumbed-down people wandering around, and you say, hey, look, I want to show you something. Just sit down for a minute. You see, there's A, and then there's B, and then that leads you to C. Now, you don't want C, but you see A and B get you there, and so you've got to understand what A and B are so that you can get out of the way of A and B. Otherwise, you get something you don't want. They don't understand that. It doesn't make any sense to them. You may as well be talking, you know, a Martian language to them. They can't go from A to B to C about this or about anything. And so out of a sense of frustration, you might say, as a reporter, but also because I was lucky enough when I went to college to have a fantastic professor who taught courses in logic, and he became a kind of a friend to me, and we had many conversations. I learned from him what it's like to actually investigate something and to think straight ahead and to be able to analyze where other people's thinking goes off the rails. And the parting shot he left me with when I left college was, he said to me, he said, look, you know, I know you're a rebel. I don't know what you're going to do or where you're going to do it or where you're going to end up. But just know what it is that you don't know. Know when you don't know. And, you know, it was a little strange to me at the time. I sort of understood what he said. But many years later, when I was working as a reporter, it came back to me. What he was essentially saying was, if you know that in this area and that area and that area, there are things you don't know, then you can investigate. You can find out what it is that you don't know. You can analyze it. You can pick it apart. You can find flaws and logical inconsistencies. You can think through all this stuff, and you can discover what it is that you don't know. And many times what you don't know is that other people are telling you lies, and now you're finding out what the lies are. But whatever it is, you don't know it now, but you can discover it. Whereas if you assume right up front that you know everything that's worth knowing, which many people do, in complete ignorance, by the way, they can never get off that dime. That's as far as they can go. That's where they end. They stay there. That's it. And they say, well, I've got this and that and the other thing, and that's it. You know, for the rest of my life, that's all I got. And I'll stick with that, right? Yeah, because they assume they know everything there is to know, as crazy as that sounds. And if they don't know it, they just turn on the TV and they'll find out. They'll listen to the CDC in this case, or the World Health Organization, or Obama, or, you know, somebody else, and okay, now I know. Well, that's insane. But that's the situation that we have. So I got to stick that in there, because otherwise, a lot of the kind of truth that you're exposing and I'm exposing dead end in an alley somewhere at midnight, because people can't think it through. They hear it, but then they reject it because they say, well, that's so strange to me that I can't accept it. Well, no, it's strange to you because you can't think it through. You can't reason. You can't follow a line of reasoning from A to B to C to D.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that quite often here, you know, at the ranch. We have people from all over the world come here, and we have scientists and healers and teachers and lamas and yogis, and, you know, it's a very eclectic place.
Here. And where is this, by the way?
We're right at the base of Mount Adams in Trout Lake, Washington.
Wow. I had no idea. That's tremendous.
Yeah, it's a 70-acre ranch, and we have a conference building and everything here. And we've had everybody trying to shut us down. We've basically finally gotten on top of it, and we're continuing. But it's kind of a crazy place here because it's a whole different subject. It has a long history of UFO activity, you know, going back to fire tower spotters and police and tribal police, and Dr. Jalen Hynek did research here. But we have these ships come over, and they power up, they light up the whole field, the treetop level, and we film them. We have multiple witnesses, And still, with all that, with boxes and boxes of video and you know, thousands and thousands of eyewitnesses and, you know, testimony from triple PhD bovine engineers and skunkworks people, all of this, despite all of that, people just get this blank look on their face, and they continue to run these old programs that all we're seeing here are meteors and satellites. You know, even when they're landing and morphing into four on the ground, you know, and we have them on film. So, I mean, I see this all the time. I just go, what is wrong with these people? I mean, it's cognitive dissonance to the max. But they, no matter how much you show these people sometimes, how much information, how many witnesses, you know, how much footage, how much, it just doesn't matter. They still continue to dismiss this because, you know, they heard it from somebody else or they went to some other source, you know, that usually is government controlled or run. And read something there. Now they're the expert because they went to a so-called officialdom website, you know. And I'm seeing this in every field, you know. It's almost in every field of our society. Anything outside the box, there's always some officialdom program there that people can go to, and they'll tell them, you know, the official truth or whatever, and they just grab it. And then, as you said, they don't do any further research. There's no critical thinking whatsoever applied.
Yeah, it's quite astounding, isn't it? I mean, you can walk right up to a person and put it in front of their nose, and it's like a miracle they don't see it. You know, you say, well, can you see the tree? Can you see the ground? Can you see? Yeah, I can see all of that. Well, look what I've got in my hand here. You don't have anything in your hand. Wow, that's incredible. How do you do that? You know?
Yeah.
That's like a great trick. But that's what we're dealing with, you know? So I have, you know, many associates who, when these so-called epidemics come up, they will talk to me and they say, well, here we go again, right? And I'll say, yeah, here we go again, you know? And yet, I have to say that this time, well, we go back to the swine flu, okay? That was a tremendous victory for the Internet because... Mm-hmm. That fraud and that hoax was exposed by a number of people on the Internet, including me, and people in droves stayed away from the vaccine, and yeah. They just refused to believe what the government was telling them, and the whole thing turned out to be a dud, and the CDC was left with a tremendous amount of egg on its face, and governments had these huge unused stocks of vaccines that they had bought for, you know, billions of dollars that nobody wanted. And yet, half the planet didn't die, as predicted. And now we have this, Ebola. And in the last 10 days, I would have to say, I've seen a growing interest, I mean explosive interest, from people online who are beginning to see this whole thing as a hoax. Yet another hoax. And that word is spreading. And a number of people are approaching this from different angles. Some are posting videos. Others are doing something else. I'm writing articles almost every day, one or two articles on this. And the response is getting to be enormous, regardless of what the authorities are saying. So that is a good sign.
That's great. It does seem like there is kind of a mass awakening underway, and I've seen it. And sometimes I go, well, I have my little bubble here, you know, where people that are already kind of on the path are pretty much awake, come to the ranch. But I'm seeing it out. I'm seeing two things when I go out into the, you know, to the, I guess, the unreal world, you know. But I see some people are starting to talk about, you know, chemtrails, you know, the Ebola and how it is you know, another false flag and things like that, and it's in the mainstream media. And they just had a UFO fly over Texas, and they did a poll. 99% of the people said they do believe in extraterrestrial life and that they do exist and UFOs do exist. And so I look at these numbers now and I go, well, that's a good sign. People are starting to wake up. They are starting to pay attention. And I'm wondering when the next step is, you know, those phases you go through where people, you know, they're in disbelief at first, they deny it, and then they fight it, you know, and then they finally accept it. And then, you know, it seems like there needs to be one other step in there where they just get disgusted and do something about it, where they rise up and just say, okay, we're done with this program. You know, I'm wondering when there is going to be some kind of a mass movement that's actually, you know, physically happening versus just talk or people just, you know, giving it lip service and not doing anything about it.
Yeah, that is certainly the next phase. And I think we're into it, but it's not as visible as we would like it to be. Because people are still looking for strategies. I mean, you've got a strategy. You've got a ranch. You've got, you know, a world that you're creating there. There are many people who would like to do that sort of thing. You know, to. I mean, I don't have to tell you the amount of hard work it takes to actually sustain something like that. But to be able to break the connections to the system so that in deeper and deeper ways we can all decentralize power, which is the whole point of the exercise to me. They have assumed huge amounts of power. Okay. They are completely corrupt. Okay. So that means that on an individual level to begin with, which is what my matrix collections are all about, and on a level of community as well, we have to reverse that trend. We have to say, no, that's not where the power is. That isn't where it is. It's with us. And we have to know that, and we have to act on it.
Mm-hmm. I've had some reports come in, and they're unsubstantiated. I don't know, you know, the validity of these reports, but they're saying that people are holding up signs saying we're not all dying, we're okay. There isn't really an epidemic going on here, over there, you know, in the places that they say this is supposedly happening. And then they have these crisis actors, you know, that they're busting that are. You know, acting out like there is this major event happening. And there's something else they're saying, that there is a pipeline there, that they're trying to get this pipeline through it in the areas, and you're saying resources, diamonds, and things like that. They're actually trying to put another oil pipeline through, which is kind of like we went to war in Afghanistan and all these other things over that people don't realize. We got the same old effect here. Now we have a pipeline that they're trying to get through. They got to get rid of the people that are resisting it, and you know, it just seems the same old scenario again. I'm sure there's more to the story, but they actually said, some people said that they actually were using something like either weaponized Ebola, or they were using some other weaponized virus program or whatever to actually kill a lot of people within that area to clear the people out of the area. I don't know if you've heard anything about that.
Yeah, I've heard about all of this. I've seen the videos of the people holding up signs or the photos. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I assume that they're real. I've seen one video of one supposed crisis actor. And it did look very suspicious indeed. It did look like maybe he wasn't sick at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the oil pipeline. I will look into that, certainly. As far as the weaponizing of, you know, a virus, the Ebola virus, is concerned, I've read the material on that. I'm not convinced it's true. And largely, again, because, as I say, until I see a good test for the presence of the Ebola virus, then I refuse to accept any spin-offs of that whole hypothesis to begin with. I do know the following, and I've written about this extensively. In fact, I've got another article I'm working on now about it. This area of the world that we're talking about, West Africa, is incredibly toxic to begin with. You don't need a bacteria or a virus, you know, to achieve that. People are dying all the time. It would be hard. I mean, you would have to go there to really experience it. I remember talking to a health worker in Haiti who had been there for a very long time. And I was at the time in 1987 talking to her about HIV, and she said, I don't want to hear anything about HIV, you know. I'm sick of all that crap. If you were to come here, you would see why people are dying. They're living in feces. There's sewage running in the streets. They're starving to death. They have no hope, no jobs. Their land has been stolen from them. They're crowded, you know, 16 into a room. You know, et cetera, et cetera. They've been subjected to vaccine campaigns in the past, which all by themselves are toxic because of the chemicals in the vaccines and the germs that are directly injected into the body, which bypass the many layers of immune defense and just push people's immune systems that are already on the edge into death. She said, what else do you need to explain all this death and dying? It's been going on for a long time. Nothing has changed here. So what I've discovered and what I continue to educate people about is that the virus is the best cover story on the planet. It has been so for a very long time. You want to destroy people and kill people in large numbers and conceal it, what you're really doing, and because you've got, you know, economic agendas and political agendas like we've been discussing. Okay, your very best cover story is a virus. You say, well, what can I do about it? You know, what do you want me to do, go out and find the virus? You know, the president of the country says, or the dictator, or the mining company, or Firestone Rubber, who has a huge toxic plantation in Liberia. They own about 10% of all the arable land in Liberia, right? You know, what do you want us to do? It's the Ebola virus, and we don't have anything to do with that. That's what's killing people. I mean, you know, come on. And that provides the incredible cover story, right? I remember I had a conversation back in, 1996, 7, something, at my publisher in San Diego, The Truth Seeker. I was writing for them, and David Icke was publishing books for them at the time. And so he and I were talking one day, and he said, okay, so I've read what you've written about AIDS. The thing I still don't understand is, you know, what is the whole idea here in the third world? And I said, the virus is the cover story. That's the cover story that they use. Just like in any covert operation, you've got to have a cover story for what you're doing. The cover story diverts people and makes them think it's something else, that and that you're not guilty, you didn't do anything wrong, you're not a criminal, you're not destroying people. It's this thing that nobody can see, this tiny invisible killer that's the, you know. And he looked at me and said, I got it, I understand that. And that was the end of the conversation. I said, that's what they're doing in Africa. That's what they've been doing, and they keep on doing it. It's HIV, it's Ebola, it's this, it's this. And that's why, unless I see some really significant, heavy evidence that somebody has successfully weaponized an Ebola virus, that I'm not buying it.
Mm-hmm. Are you open to, we've got a few listeners here that are sending in some emails to check into, you know, some of the different programs here, and I know we've covered most of them. But would you be interested in just answering a few of these questions?
Yeah, I've got a few more minutes, so we could take a couple of those, sure.
Okay, yeah. And we're running out of time here, so we'll try to get some of these. But we've got Cynthia from Sydney, Australia. And she says, even though Ebola is part of a scare campaign, should we still take precautions to protect ourselves? People are dying, and I don't want to. I think we covered that one. You know,
yeah, I think we did.
Yeah,
you know, the best protection is, I tell people, is get as healthy as you can. Make your immune system as strong as you can through natural means. Because that's your best protection against everything.
Yeah.
Germs, whatever they are. You know, the immune system defeats germs. That's what the immune system is there to do. Germs do nothing to people until their immune systems are already very weak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the story.
Yeah, we've got a water here I helped work with for about, quite a few years now, about 10 years or so. And it's crystallized oxygen suspended in a microhydrant. And it's Langenberg water is what they call it. The German scientist created it. But oxygen is the highest systemic antibiotic you can get. And if you put an oximeter on your finger and drink this water, you can watch it just peg, you know. And it's just amazing. But he's run into all kinds of problems. But, I mean, just things like colloidal silver, especially the nanosilver, you know, the oxygen water, you know, high doses of C. And as you said, just keeping your immune system up, you know, get away from it, start eating lighter, you know, and check out where your water's coming in. Eat pure water, put some lemon in it or lime in your water, you know, things like that. Just there's a lot of little things people can do to actually get your system up.
Dozens of things you can do. That's the best protection.
Yeah. Now, there's another one here. We've got Joseph from Maui, and he's asking, what are your thoughts on the NIH? NIH's exclusive license to XL Bio, Inc. in Minnesota to produce a vaccine to combat Ebola using a modified rabies virus. Does Ebola and rabies, human zombies, and he's going through this whole thing. Is that why the U.S. Army has been doing zombie drills for the past 4 years?
Well, it might be. I don't know, but... I think that there is some connection, actually, that it's not all a joke. In other words, how do you control people who are just, you know, acting like zombies? Sure. I mean, half the population acts like zombies right now. Just go to the mall.
Yeah.
The Department of Defense has a tremendous stake, as does the National Institutes of Health, in developing, you know, an Ebola vaccine. And there are a number of groups that are, you know, working on this or have been working on this for some time. So whichever vaccine they ultimately release, it's going to be making billions of dollars for the people involved. But also, like any vaccine, it's going to be toxic because, and I'm not just saying because it's special, it's got chemicals in it like formaldehyde and probably aluminum and polysorbate 80 and a whole list of chemicals that are toxic. And when you inject them into the body, nothing good is going to happen. And then you've got, presumably, some version of the Ebola virus, some piece of it, and then you've got other germs that enter into the manufacturing process incidentally because of lab contamination, and all of this is in a soup that you inject into the body. That's a very bad idea to begin with. Then on top of that, of course, if they want to put some element in the vaccine that is going to be extra toxic, it's very easy to do, very difficult to detect. In fact, experiments have been done with anti-fertility vaccines where a hormone called HCG was put into vaccines and was tested in the third world to terminate pregnancies because of the idea, of course, of depopulation. So many things can be inserted on top of what's ordinarily there into a vaccine. So you bet. Billions of dollars of profit on toxic components.
Yeah, I mean, they could turn people. I mean, people, like you're saying, are already zombies. You know, there's, you know, I was walking through town the other day, and I just saw people, nobody home. You look in their eyes, and they're like, they have these blank looks on their faces, and they're walking. There's just, there's no love, no joy, just basically nobody home. It wouldn't take much more to push them over the edge, you know, into, you know, the next level. And I see that, you know, that maybe that is why they're doing all these zombie drills, because they have some agenda to turn a lot of people into zombies and then you know, get the population, you know, control thing going by labeling everybody as zombies and then just, you know, getting rid of you one way or the other.
That's like
She said, one of the blogs talks about the PRC test, and you stated it is admittedly insufficient. We covered that one. We already elaborated on that. Well, yeah, a lot of these questions I'm looking at, we've already covered. They're talking about, has Ebola been weaponized, and where were the field tests, and is there a cure? You know, one we don't know. I know we did see a patent on the Ebola virus, so that was going around the internet. I thought that was kind of interesting, is why would they patent the Ebola virus?
Yeah, I've done some research on that. One of the things that people don't understand about patents is that the people who are applying for the patent, in this case, the U.S. government, they have to call it an invention.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, what are you patenting? I mean, am I going to apply for a patent on a lamp in my living room? You know, it already exists. So patents are for inventions. So if you read through that patent, every time the Ebola virus is mentioned, it's called an invention. And that's just language that's used because you have to use that, hopefully, in order to get the patent approved. But what's really important in that patent application is that the government is applying to have the right to any treatments for the virus. And they, of course, would be, yes, invented. And they repeat that time after time. Any implications stemming from this virus, including research on drugs, vaccines, etc., they couch that in different language, would also be part of the patent. So what they're really looking for there is control over all the treatments. That's the essence of what that's all about.
Yeah. We're almost out of time here, so I wanted to get one last question. We've got Patty from New York, and she says, do you think the government is going to institute a mandatory Ebola vaccination program in our schools? And or in order to fly, what are your thoughts on how to avoid being forced to have these vaccinations?
I've written about that. I don't see a sudden announcement. You know, everybody in the country has to get vaccinated against Ebola. First of all, they would have to produce 300 million shots.
Mm-hmm.
The way I see this possibly playing out, there's several different possibilities here, but one scenario is, okay, this person is an Ebola patient and he is in this hospital, so all the health workers in that hospital have to get vaccinated. And then we've run down the contacts that this person had, they have to get vaccinated. And the people who live in those buildings, they have to get vaccinated. And the government, indeed, could make that mandatory. And they would say, well, if you refuse, then we're going to quarantine you. You can't leave your apartment for 21 days or 42 days or whatever. And quarantines could definitely happen. But I believe that they will be certainly selective quarantines and selective vaccinations. The first batches of vaccine that come out of the hopper, if they do come, I believe will be health workers. Health workers uh-huh. here and health workers there and health workers wherever are going to have to get vaccinated. Or they lose their jobs. Or maybe they'll let them wear masks for 12 hours a day or whatever. But there's going to be tremendous pressure to get the health workers vaccinated. That's going to be the beginning. And from there, it's like I described. Now, they could play this out. I mean, they could say, we've got 75 new cases in the following cities around the country, and we're going to have mass vaccination. They could go that far. But I think this is where they're going to start with health workers. Mm-hmm. And they're risking problems if they try to make this mandatory in huge areas. Because a lot of people are just going to refuse. So they're being somewhat cautious here. As far as travel and vaccination go, yeah, I suppose they could do that, but I don't think they're going to try that unless maybe we're talking about people that are flying to and from West Africa. But
yeah, definitely. I could see that. The you know, unfortunately, we've hit the end of the hour. Is the best way to get in contact with you is through the nomorefakenews.com?
That's it. Yes, that's my site. That's where I publish everything, and people can go there, and they can read my blog and go back in the archives. And I've written lot of material.
Yeah, there's a wealth of information there for folks that want to go check out more of this. I know I've just been inundated with emails to bring some, you know, common sense into this situation that's going on. And I can't thank you enough for, you know, shedding the light on this and telling people to start paying attention and use a little critical thinking when, you know, they start hearing all these fear campaigns.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed being here. And if you have a moment, I'd like to talk to you off the air.
Great. Sounds great. All right. We've got to sign off today. So this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. Have a great evening.